Only for a short while.
Right, we'll start getting in. So welcome to the Repost Non-League Show, Chairman's Debate. And of course, joining us tonight, as normal, is Keith McMahon. And of course, with us as well tonight is Mark Harris from the Northern League, Terry Buck from the Summer League, and the one and only Mr. Nick Robinson from the Isthmian League. And
Dave.
Yes,
Northern
mate.
Premier League.
Northern Premier League, all right. Northern Premier League.
Hold the book up again.
So, that's the Northern League.
Yeah, that's so, not the Northern Premier League.
So, as I was asking earlier on, I mean, literally start with the same question again. I mean, a lot of people have actually sent in and said, asked the question, you know, what with all the other leagues now sort of going points per game, was it the actual correct decision from the three leagues to actually go and do null and void so very early on in March? Mark, I mean, you were talking first.
Can I answer that, please, David?
Yeah,
the Southern League originally wanted to go points per game. And we then talked to the other two leagues. Nick was adamant that it was null and void. Mark became null and void. So for consensus, we went null and void so that the FA wanted, I understand, null and void anyway. So we went with the consensus to say, okay, we'll join the other two leagues, null and void.
Terry, can I ask, why did you want points per game?
Because obviously we wanted teams to go to promotion and relegation. My big issue is not so much with it's the National League, because if my team wins a league, where do they go? If the National League are not going to take them, what's the point?
I understand that, but obviously for football people, and I understand everyone's own opinions, but to win leagues, don't you have to finish the season?
Ideally, yes, but we were probably three quarters of the way through. How else do you do it? Null and void. It's the only other option.
No, I agree with that, and that's why I'm saying that's just asking about the points per game thing. I think there was only sort of one league that it was the Northern Premier that South Shields were so clear. Otherwise, everyone else's leagues were quite tight, weren't they?
I think if I could just
we were points per game. We then took the consensus with the other two colleagues and said, okay, we'll join and null and void as well.
I think there were two clubs across the whole steps 3 to 6 that had actually won their divisions. I think it's right to say that the majority said it's wrong to promote or relegate if you haven't had a full season.
The whole point of the National League system.
Sorry, Mark, go on, Mark.
The whole point of the National League system is to have a standardised approach. Two leagues will have discussed and brought its own thoughts and recommendations. He says you have to have consensus. Each of those decisions were entirely correctly following due process. And a key point here, there's been much made of so-called lack of consultation. Let me tell you, each of the three leagues on this call now, all of our boards are populated by representatives of clubs.
Correct.
So that's really important point. But also, and I can understand why there's still fixation on null and void, because we're not playing football. But we've got to move the narrative on. We've got to start focusing on getting the season restarted safely so that we get people back to our turnstiles, into our clubs. And most important of all, let's get people watching non-league football again, which is what we all want.
Yeah, I think right, Mark. The other thing to emphasise that null and void became the popular phraseology, but actually what we did was we expunged the record. We stopped the season and expunged the record. And I think that null and void has a different concept. Just to expunge the record, you know, people came out and said, oh, well, what happens? Do we still keep our goal records? Yes, all the matches still happened. Anybody who got sent off still got a 3-game ban, you know, and anybody that hasn't served that ban will still have to serve it next season. All those things still happened. It's just that we weren't able to finish the season.
Can I ask you, obviously, Mark, I 100% agree with you. I said I've got my opinions and over how this should be finished or should have been finished. I'm a manager myself, and I do agree that we should be looking forward to next year, whenever that may be. But do you think it's sort of people are still questioning it because of how long it's took the National League not to follow suit, and people are thinking, oh, it's only step one and two that matter for non-league football?
I think there's a food chain in football. I mean, the National League will have to answer for, and it's a matter for them to deal with about the timing of their decision. As I think Nick mentioned earlier, one of the key things we needed to give our clubs was certainty. You know, we've all run clubs, and you can't know, you can't carry on incurring costs with no income coming in. Why are we still talking about it? I think that's part of the fact. But I think the biggest influence on it, to be honest, Keith, is the fact we're not playing games right now. Because there's no games going on, there's very little for people to talk about in and discuss in non-league football. And that's entirely understandable. But, you know, we're all planning and going through the contingency plannings and working closely with the FA to ensure that we can get a return to football as soon as possible.
Well, one of the things one of the clubs that affected, you know, with the decision was Wear. And Paul Howells, he's asked me to ask you a few questions, so we'll go down the list as it goes down. But I suppose on the same sort of sense of the sort of null and void, or you know, whichever terminology you want to use for that at the end of the season, he's put, why was the decision made to null and void the season so early in the lockdown?
Well, I'll answer that one. We had our clubs inundating us with what's going to happen. Please make a decision. You know, we've got to remember that steps three and four, you know, we have a vast majority of non-contract players. But those with contracts wanted to know, what are we going to do? At that stage, there was no furloughing. You know, we hadn't even heard of the word furlough. We didn't know what was going to happen. And people were genuinely worried and scared for the future of their clubs. They wanted guidance. They wanted leadership. We gave it. And I think it has been shown that we did the right thing.
100%.
Yeah, I agree with you, Nick. I think, and obviously, Paul, we spoke about this many a time, but obviously some people might even say, was it done too late? Because, you know, the safety of people comes first. And Mark was just saying now, we're looking obviously for next season. And the most important thing is to make sure that players, officials and supporters are going to be safe. Well, when the actual season was halted, there was no, obviously, you know, we didn't know how people were going to be safe, how bad the obviously pandemic was. And I think people are forgetting that as well. I think because I think going back over your conversation, Dave, that we had a maybe 6 weeks where the expungement of results or whatever, points per game, went quiet because people were so sort of made aware of how bad this pandemic was and people were dying. Now that there's sort of light at the end of the tunnel when people are sitting there thinking, oh, football's going to start again, they're forgetting all that's gone behind them, and they're just gone back to how it was again. Oh, we should have been promoted. We should do this. I think that's a big thing as well.
And they've got to remember that the professional game is so 100% different from the national game, you know, and steps four, you know, we're light years away from the Premier League. If we talk about, you know, having to test our players and test officials and all that sort of thing, it's not going to happen at our level. But the one thing that we have to do is we need spectators in our grounds.
Agreed.
And I think it's more than that as well. It's, yes, we absolutely need spectators in our grounds, but spectators also need to access safely and with social distancing. Yeah. They need to be able to access social clubs. I mean, it's true for all three of our leagues that 85 to 90% of clubs' revenue is tied to match days. And even something like the number of people you get into your bar is a crucial factor. And we all know our clubs do live hand to mouth. So what we've got to do is address each of these things and come up with solutions that work. But picking up on Nick's point, as we all know, there's massive differences between clubs in our own leagues, the biggest club and the smallest club, big difference. So a one-size-fits-all is a massive challenge. So it may well be that we need to tailor what those requirements are to suit clubs of different sizes.
Mm-hmm. Moving forward, just to the three of you, are you obviously looking for start dates? I know nobody knows yet, but are you looking at the same start date for all three, or would you be guided by obviously the government, because certain parts of the country, obviously, the pandemic and the crisis could be worse?
Well, I think, if I can go first on that one, and then my colleagues can either agree or not, as the case may be. I think you've got a National League system, and the whole point of it is you have consistency. Now, at steps three and four, I think it's absolutely paramount importance that we all follow the same way forward. Clearly, we don't know how quick lockdown is going to be released, and it could well be that we're overtaken by government. Equally, should the government decide to go to a process of regional lockdowns, I mean, in one of our areas up in the northwest of England, we still have quite a high R rate. It's currently hovering just below one. So there's a whole number of factors that could come into play. But certainly from my own perspective, I think it's really important that we all start and finish on the same day.
Agreed. 100% agree with that.
I think it would be very difficult for us to say, well, the Southwest can start. You know, if you live in Devon and Cornwall, you can go and play football. But if you're in Durham, Northumberland, no, you can't. I think Mark's absolutely right. What we've got to do is we've got to come up with something. We know we won't please all the people all the time. We know that for certain. But what we've got to do is we've got to please the majority, and we've got to come up with a criteria that people can match and meet and go safely. Because the worst thing that could happen is for us to do it quickly, stupidly, and for people to be affected and for that spike to come back that everybody's worried about.
Yeah, definitely.
And tied to that, you've also got the question of, some would say, well, you need to wait until it's going to be before you start setting a date. I don't agree with that. I think people, non-league football fans, managers, players, chairman, anyone who's associated with non-league football, we need to have some dates that we can aim for. We've got to start planning towards that. Now, it may well be that we do get overtaken by external events, but we've got to plan, because the message has got to be there is going to be a next season.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I agree with that, Mark. That's one of the things I did ask. I spoke about as well, just as a manager, just to say that, you know, if we was told, you know, the 1st of October is a start date, but it could get moved. And I would be happy with that, because you can arrange and then you can sort of put things back if you. And also, it gives you a bit of hope. I do understand, and I think some of you, obviously, I won't get the criticism, whereas your leagues would, if you said we're starting on the 1st of October and all of a sudden you come back and go, oh, it's the 1st of November. But I do agree with you on that.
Well, question two from Paul is, why has this not been consistent across all leagues affiliated by the FA?
I'll throw perhaps an idea in at that. I think it's a degree naive. I think it's naive to think that there's going to be a standardised approach. I mean, as Nick said before, the professional game is a million miles away from non-league, even within non-league. Take the national division of the National League, three quarters or whatever the figure is, full-time clubs. These are professional football clubs. Go down to step two, which is closer to where we are. It's Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday. It's part-time. But Yeah. Ideal scenarios are ideal scenarios. Plus the fact at our level, we don't have broadcast contracts. So whatever it is, the Premier League, £760 million at risk if they don't fulfil their commitments. I don't know what the figures are for the EFL, but there's broadcasting commitments in the National League as well. So we don't have that. And at the end of the day, whilst you try and have consistency, we have to put the interests of our clubs first.
Mm-hmm. Also, we have to put in the interests of our spectators as well, equally.
Yeah, I think that, as we said before, it is different, and therefore there can't be an enormous consistency. I think we got consistency so far as we can. We went 3-7, and the whole of recreational football was stopped. Women's football was stopped. You know, we went as far as we could. One's got to recognise the National League, you know, do have this link with the EFL, and they don't want to lose that. I mean, if and the club in question, Barrow, you know, they are desperately hoping that they will still get promoted. I hope they do. I really do. I remember Barrow getting voted out of the Football League. And you know, for those of us who are football fans, we want to see that happen. We want to see them go back. So I think that you can justify making different decisions for some parts of the football.
But the thing about that, though, is, Nick, we're in a pyramid, aren't we? So, and that's what people look at. If Barrow get promoted, then someone from the Eastern Premier League are going to go, well, why can't we? And it's a knock-on, isn't it?
Yep.
Well, I think that the way I'm looking at it, which is probably a simplistic one, is that Bury Football Club are out of the EFL. They are one short. Now, I wouldn't have thought that they want to go one short. So if nothing else, there should be one club going up. And if that creates vacancies all the way down, personally, I would want to fill that. But what you have to worry about is, well, how do we choose how to fill it? Because whatever we do will be wrong.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Say, for instance, and God hope it doesn't, but and I can only just say this. Just say Carl Shorten go out of business. And then there's a space in the Eastern Premier League. Who do you promote? Someone, you know. So it's an ongoing, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's something that we have got to look at on the Alliance Committee. We've got to look at this. You know, we're looking at. We've done an awful lot of work on the Alliance Committee since the 20th of March, and I'm sure we will continue to do so. But whether we make the right decisions or not, the trouble is that everybody's there to criticise us.
Would there not be a case for, say, in League Two then, you know, Stevenage to be relegated if they were bottom, level off the Div Two, but then have one extra.
We have no control on that, David. That's the whole.
Thing. No. I'm just saying with what Nick was saying about, you know, with having one less to solve that issue. Would it be better to have one more in the National and level off in League Two?
Yeah, but the National League has 24 as it is. Mm. So that would give them 25. You try running a division with 25. You don't want to, you know, on the few occasions that we've had to run one shot, and I think all three of our leagues have done that from time to time. It's a nightmare. Because you've got one club that's free every week. You know, we had it a couple of seasons ago when Thamesmead went out this early doors. And you've got one club that isn't playing on the Saturday. And, you know, it's horrendous.
Well, can I just... We had one club, which you know about, Blackford and Langley, who do not meet the grading requirement. Therefore, they will go to step five. Therefore, we will have a vacancy in our Premier Division South. And I'm looking at playing with one team short because there'll be no promotion relegation.
You see, there are so many solutions, and yet there are no solutions. Yeah. Because you've got to have a solution that is consistent with everything else. The whole principle of being in the National League system is there's a very, very clear process for where you can have reprieves and where you can't have reprieves. And you can't simply rewrite the rule book overnight. So... But I think the key point I want to make is what we've all got to remember is that football is effectively a group of members clubs, whether you are the Premier League, the EFL, effectively each one of them is a members club, and our own leagues are to a degree. So particularly in the professional game, turkeys never vote for Christmas.
Well, we had Ollie Bayliss has also asked the question. He said, a bit away from, I suppose, from Null and Void for the second, but he's come in and said, are the leagues any closer to finding a sponsor for next season?
I'll take that, shall I?
Yeah, go on.
The straight and honest answer is no. And we think, but there's got to be a caveat to that. We are working, you know, to follow the old cliche, around the clock on this. Mm. But we've got to bear in mind the following things. There has never in the last 30 years been a worse time to try and go and find sponsorship. Mm-hmm. The people that you need to speak to in sponsoring organisations, an awful lot of them are on furlough. And if you can find the right person to speak to, nobody wants to spend any money right now. Correct. So let me perhaps flesh that out as to what we are doing. So between the three leagues, we've agreed a common approach. We're looking for various different options. We are talking to organisations. We've been on calls, emails flying right, left and centre. So this is not an easy fix. Plus the fact the worst thing we could do would be to simply take the first deal that comes along. So it's a long game. We've got to get the right sponsor in. It's got to be the right money. It's got to be the right duration. But as of right now, no, we don't.
Also then, Mark, so you want it like the sponsors, all three leagues again, not in dual like it has done in the past?
That's our preference. Our preference. But, yeah. You know, we've also got to be very pragmatic. If we're unable to secure that, and people will ask the follow-up question, is bound to be, well, why would you want that? And the answer is dead simple. There is a premium that goes to having that exclusivity at 3 and 4. So to be blunt, by offering all three leagues to one sponsor, you tend to get more money. Mm. Now, if we can't do that, then yes, of course, we will have to look to individual sponsors for individual leagues. However, the three leagues have never worked more closely together when it comes to looking for partners, and there are various conversations that have been that are at various stages of us working with smaller level partners, but working across steps 3 and 4, because there's that old cliche, isn't there? The old saying that says that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
We are marketing the three leagues as the Trident Leagues. And we've got a sponsorship prospectus. What you'd be surprised about is the number of emails and phone calls we get asking, is it available? And you say, yes. I had one today. Somebody emailed me that we've spoken to in the past. Oh, I understand the title sponsorship's up for it. Can we be considered? Yes, absolutely. And if as a result of tonight somebody else wants to be considered,
then we will talk to them.
Contact us tomorrow. What I did today was to send them the PowerPoint we have as a prospectus. And if they come back to us tomorrow, then that's great. But as Mark said, we are working so well together. You know, if we went back 10 years and told the three leagues then what we're doing, they wouldn't believe us.
This is what I was going to say, because obviously I can remember that. But over on the last 15 minutes talking to all three of you, it just seems like you are all together as one. So you are all step 3 and all step 4. And I think the sponsorship thing shows that consensus. When the Bet Victor thing first come in, for someone like I said, me on the outside, you sat there and thought, oh, they just want to sponsor all three leagues. Not you're all together. But as yourself, Mark and Terry's explained about your decision with expunging the records all together, it does give that feel that all step 3 and 4 is one.
Yeah, I think it's a very good point about what did the Bet Victor sponsorship do? It did one really, really important thing. It showed everybody out there that it can be done. And it hadn't been done before. We hadn't had, although we'd had a sponsor owned by the same company, what we'd never done was to have three league sponsorship agreements all done consistently. And I think that is actually testament to the people working in the leagues and the clubs who made it work.
So what's for the future then? An annual mass presentation, Ball?
Well, given that we probably wind up doing it like this, the three leagues, we have a weekly call. We talk constantly. But an important thing, we don't agree on everything, not at all, because each league is differently run in different ways. So there isn't a complete one size fits all. But again, we've all got the same challenges. All our clubs have got the same problems. Whether you are a club in the Northern Prem, to the Isthmian, to the Southern, the challenges are the same. It's all around people, getting the volunteers in. It's around the cash and it's around managing the compliance. So we've all got the same challenges. And if we can share best practice with one another, because none of us has got a monopoly on what's best.
Gents, can I just veer off a little bit? Because obviously I've got my own question. How do all three of you feel about a League Cup, your own League Cups? There is a follow-on question to me. That's why.
Well, I'll jump in because I think I'm probably different to the other two. But I look at it that, first of all, it will depend when we can start as to what the landscape of the divisions look like, as to whether we can do that. Last year we had, as you know, for step four in the Isthmian League, we had a group stage and then a knockout. I think it's fairly clear that we won't be able to justify the group stage for next year. But we do have a sponsor. That sponsor, in actual fact, I've got a call set up with him on Wednesday morning. Kelly and I are talking to him on Wednesday morning. But if that money's available, I would be mad to turn it down because it's exactly what our clubs want, money. Yeah. So the way I see it is that if we possibly can, we will.
One of the things that was discussed, Nick, I remember originally with BetVictor, was they would sponsor the League Cup at one stage, and one of the agreements was that the three finalists or the three winners would play at Liverpool, because that BetVictor was sponsoring Liverpool at that stage, and a super final would be played at Anfield. So that answers your part of your question.
I think my own view on League Cups is a little different. I think you've got to separate the short term from the long term. I think one of the challenges, particularly in the north, and I'm not saying this isn't the case for both Terry and Nick, but one of the biggest challenges, I think, is midweek away travel, not just obviously for supporters, but for clubs. So one of the things we as the Northern Premier League are keen to explore is how we can actually reduce the burden of midweek travel. Now, we also have a sponsor for our League Cup. We're in a slightly different position insofar as we've had the discussions with the sponsor and the sponsor is happy to sponsor something else. So the money is not lost. I think next season, to totally support what Nick has said, it may be impractical for us to get the League Cup in. I think in every competition, the League Cup tends to be a little bit like the poor relation, unless you put so much prize money into it that changes the priority of it. And in my own experience, people and fans only really get interested in the League Cup towards the back end of it. But those are my thoughts anyway.
I think you may know where I'm sort of going with it. And again, I'm sure the three of you have maybe discussed it. And I know people come to finances, but have you thought about, again, and it binds the three leagues together, of having an inter-league cup where all step three sides for the three leagues can choose to go into it, or step four, you know, so you could get drawn into the southern. It would be the teams, obviously, that want to go into it. And I know there'd be expense, but I just mean moving forward. I'm not on about next year, but that could actually link the three step three and three step four leagues together.
Keith, I just remind you that some years ago, and I've been probably involved far too many years, but you know, we had the Premier Interleague Cup, the GMAC Cup. When Vauxhall were involved, we had the GMAC Cup. It did exactly that, but it didn't last long because it wasn't viable. I mean, it genuinely wasn't. I think, you know, Mark, you were probably with a club at the time. Terry, you certainly were with Hitchin. You know, it was very difficult because you suddenly regionalise the draw. And then if you regionalise, well, the clubs aren't playing clubs in another league. But I think it lasted 3 years.
Yeah, I get what I'm trying to say. Nick, again, it could even be a good pre-season thing. But if clubs sort of wanted to enter, they don't have to. Like I said, you could nominate three or four clubs, you know, and have your own little tournament.
I think it's a wider question, to be honest, Keith. I think the question's in and around just how much football can clubs at our level actually sustain. You know, and obviously midweek football is part of that. Wear and tear on players, wear and tear on supporters' pockets is another one. So I think there's a conversation to be had. I mean, one of the things that we are looking at the moment, and it's not a tail out of school, is whether we can secure an opt-out for our clubs from county cups next year. Because if there is pressure on fixtures, and let's not forget the season that was, should we say, terminated early. I'm not going to use the null and void. But the season that was terminated early, certainly up north, the weather was horrendous. Now, none of us know what the weather's going to be like, but it would be a double whammy to have to start the season late and then find that we lose whole rounds of fixtures. So we need to build some flexibility in. Otherwise, you know, we'll just encounter the same problems.
I think, Keith, to pick up your point, you know, there may be something as with the work that we do together to say, well, if we all have a League Cup, maybe the League Cup winners go into a different competition. But again, but the problem with that is actually getting the clubs engaged into that. You know, in the Isthmian League, we have the biggest problem in the world trying to get two clubs to play for our Charity Shield this year. I mean, as it happened, before everything closed down, we made a decision not to stage it this year. Because you go to a club and say, would you play in the Charity Shield? No, ideally, it's the league champions against the cup winners. Well, the league champions have gone up to step two, although they won't this year, but the league champions, there won't be league champions. But the league champions go up to step two. They don't want to know, you know, and it's really very, very difficult. And to, you know, what has happened over the last few years is that the league has become all important. The league is just so important. And I think that the cup, you know, your approach had, well, I don't know what your approach is to the League Cup, but I guess the majority of managers use it as a squad match. Yeah. So we've allowed five from five subs for in our League Cup, and clubs wanted that. And you know, I think that the importance of the league cannot be underestimated.
Well, we've had talking about that with somebody called Mad Dog. If anybody knows that, Mad Dog is a Rushden.
I think he used to play for me, but carry on.
He's a Rushden Diamonds fan, and he said, "Would a consideration be given in hindsight?" Of what has happened in playing more home league games Tuesday, Saturday early and either scrapping the League Cup or stopping, then taking precedent over league over league matches, since these can take place any time, but all league matches need to be done before the end of April for playoffs to take place. My club lost 7 games which could have been played earlier in the year to weather and also to the Southern League Cup, including to a team who I'm certain the league tie would have been better attended than the League Cup tie. The rearranged league game was never played.
Well, I think if I get my own thoughts on this, I've never met a football fan yet, and we're all fans, who's ever happy with fixtures. It is the dark arts of football. No one likes fixtures. And what everyone tends to forget is that what you have to avoid at all costs is one club or another club having a sporting advantage. For example, playing 5 games at home in one sequence. Funnily enough, Terry and Nick's leagues have up to now, we've been the odd one out in not allowing clubs to rearrange their own fixtures. We've now changed that to come in line with Terry and Nick. So there's a limit to what you can do, because when you're putting fixtures together, how do you know that there's a big fate going on down the road, or this might happen? The local league club has a big FA Cup tie. All of those varying factors. We work with computerized software, and it's still a very imprecise science. I don't know how Terry and Nick see that.
I wouldn't disagree with
them. I think that the majority of fans, and no disrespect to Dog or anybody else, but the majority don't understand the difficulty of actually setting out fixtures. That if we try and if you want a balanced program, so you want so many before Christmas, so many after. You know, Kelly does a fantastic job on our fixtures, but you know, she'd come to the board each year and say, "Well, if you do that, you know, to every action, there's a reaction. So if you do that, if you have 5 midweek fixtures there, you're not going to get them in there. It's got to be in February." And, you know, there are so many different things I've learned over the years just to say, what's the best way to do it? We've got, Keith will tell you, we've gone to the club saying, what do you want? We go with what they want, and they come back, and they're still not happy because they hadn't realised that the quid pro quo of having five matches up to the 1st of November was that they didn't get anything after Christmas. And, you know, then you don't have, you don't play the first 19 because people want to play the 19 and then play the other 19 afterwards. You know, it's so difficult.
Plus the fact that, I mean, do you remember in the good old days when we used to produce fixture cards? Do you remember those? You know, the first game of the season, you gave out a little fixture card. Well, they're completely useless now after three games because once the teams that you're drawn against from a higher level in the FA Cup and the FA Trophy and so on and so forth, and currently, don't forget, County Cup ties, according to FA rules, take precedence over league fixtures. So it's a constant state of flux. Unfortunately, it's a reality, and I do totally understand where Mad Dog's coming from. But in reality, it's not about finding a perfect solution. It's about finding the least imperfect solution. Either that, or you get Harry Potter in to do it.
Carry on, David.
One of the questions that somebody had asked, and he sort of comes into it, what we was talking about right at the beginning with the expulsion of the league. They were saying that if one league, they said the Summer League wanted to actually go per game. I think somebody said about being discussion with the clubs and helping the clubs out. But if, say, Terry's clubs wanted PPG and Nick's and yours, Mark, wanted to be the season to end, how does Terry, how then did you go back to your clubs afterwards, after the discussion with the other two chairmen, and say to them, look, we've gone with, you know, the majority and gone with the actual expulsion of the league?
It comes back to what we said originally, David, that we did originally want points per game. But having talked to Nick and Mark, they were both of the view it was null and void. The FA was suggesting null and void. Therefore, the consensus says, OK, we will follow. Which makes sense because we're all in this together.
As a chairman, though, Terry, how hard was that to go back to your clubs and let them know that, you know, what they possibly wanted, they weren't going to get, they were going to get the opposite?
It's effectively, we try to blame the FA, saying the FA wanted this, therefore...
it's going to be a question, and hopefully it will never happen, but and I know, Nick, that we spoke before about it, but is there something going to be put in plan if, God forbid, we're sitting in the same predicament? So all leagues, again, would know if it went points per game or if it was season ended.
I was on a meeting this morning and put exactly that point, and the response from the other members of that committee was, let's move on, because we will never get something that suits everybody. No. We've got far too many divergent interests, and I think that whilst, yes, it's been a wake-up call and it's been a situation where I think we can put in some pre-planning to, because nobody ever thought that there would be a pandemic such as this that would stop football. You know, people have talked about the bad weather of 62 and things like that. No, we've never had anything like this. So what it's made us do is to look at the rules and say, well, if that happens again, can we do this? Can we do that? And I think what we're looking at is to give the ability for leagues to do that, what they haven't been able to do this time.
You said, like Nick, before when we had you on the show, that in the Isthmian League, there is a rule saying that if the fixtures aren't fulfilled, then the records are expunged. So if it was just in black and white across all three leagues, that if, you know, heaven forbid, something drastic happened, this is what's going to happen.
I think for me, that is the key thing. Like Nick, it's a question that we're looking for an answer to as well. And it's impossible to come up with a finite set of circumstances because, by definition, we've just been through an unprecedented event. Who's to say there's not going to be another unprecedented event next year? Mm-hmm. So it's impossible to be completely prescriptive. But I do think that there are some learnings to be taken from this. Clearly, things like the number of games to be played, I mean, again, without raking over old coals, over a quarter of games at the point at which fixtures were suspended were outstanding. Now, any football person knows there isn't a year that goes by that doesn't involve some club coming either and making a last minute dash into the playoff positions or making a last minute bid to avoid relegation. And in the same way as clearly, you know, some clubs did not necessarily agree, it's a matter of record, that some clubs did not agree. Equally, had there been, had we gone the points per game solution, then all it would have produced was a, you'd have been moving the chairs around the deck, because it would have been a whole different bunch of clubs mounting challenges. As Nick rightly says, this is one of those situations where whatever you do, you're damned. What we are charged with doing is making a decision that's in the interests of the majority. Oh, and that's all that we can do.
Can it happen, Mark? Go on, sorry, Nick.
Well, I was just going to say, compare it to, you know, floodlight failure after 68 minutes. Well, you know, we as a league then have to decide, does the score stand or not? So then you go to, well, it's 78 minutes, and then you go 88 minutes. Most times, if you haven't completed 90 minutes, the referee actually blown his final whistle with the minutes added on, people want to replay the game.
I agree. I think
you have to take that forward. So if that's the principle in one match, well, it's the principle for the whole division. So the only thing we could come back with is to say, well, if you played so many percent of your games, all right, it will stand. But there'll be plenty of who don't like that.
Yeah, no, well, I'm one of them. I won't lie. Obviously, I've spoke before. Well, I am. I had an same argument with someone else today from another league below, who that's why I asked, that thought it was still going to get turned around. And I said, how can you promote someone that hasn't won anything? And that's just me personally. I'm not, you know, I've got my own opinion, but I go back and I do feel sorry for the three of yous. And I said that to the Eastern League before, but obviously the only sometimes that football got stopped was in the World War. And that was obviously the season was void. So was you surprised, or, and I'm not putting you all on your heads on the block here, but was you surprised, one, that there wasn't a rule for this from the FA, or you wasn't told by the FA this was what should be done? Do you think you were sort of left out to sort of, well, make it, you know, decide between yourselves?
Well, hold on. Let's remember that each of our leagues has a representative on the FA. So we contribute towards the decision. When you say the FA, that is us. Yeah. And we are very anxious, and you know, Mark and Terry isn't the Southern League rep, but with Anthony, the Southern League rep, who's his vice chairman, you know, we're very anxious that we are autonomous leagues, and we stand up for that, and we don't want Wembley, whatever Wembley stands for, to tell us what's going to happen. We are part of the democratic discussions that take place, and I think that's really important to remember that.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, again, we often forget that we are the only country with an equivalent of the National League system. We undersell it, something chronic. No other country has got a multi-step National League system. Now, it ain't perfect. Does it need change? Yeah, it needs change without a shadow of a doubt. But it is what it is. And within that system, certainly step by step, you have to have the consistency. So I wouldn't blame the FA at all for where we're at with this. The circumstances were unprecedented. You're in a situation where, I mean, to be fair, if government's making it up, and there is no handbook for this, then that follows on down the line. All that we can do is make decisions that are in the interests of our members. Let me give you a statistic. And we're all aware, and your viewers will be aware, that there was a challenge, and I can't comment on that. That's a question for the FA. But it's worth quoting a statistic at you, which I happen to have. So there are 88 clubs at step three. 11 clubs disagreed with the decision. At step four, there's 140, and 21 disagree with the decision. So that's 32 clubs out of 228.
Mark,
was it the right decision? Yes, it was.
Mark, back to what Keep had said. I mean, would you not expect, you know, the FA itself, as sort of the leaders of football in this country, to actually have a rule in place that says every league must be null and void, or every league must be points per, you know, and let them actually tell you rather than, you know, leaving you sort of out to dry. A bit like, okay, I know you said you're part of the FA yourself, but surely there has to be a rule. Like, and I work in a supermarket, there's rules for everything. Surely there should be a rule that says, you know, once this had happened and they heard what you wanted to do.
And the straight answer to that, David, is that's one of the things that we as three leagues will be looking at, because it's ultimately, providing we don't want to start playing with square goalposts, triangular footballs, and 22 aside, you know, it's for us to bring forward to the FA proposals that we want. And I think it's fair to say that is something that we need to learn from, so that there are some mechanisms. What I don't have, as Nick just alluded to, is what the answer to it is. We know what the question is. We don't know the answer, but we will find.
Talking about a normal outside, or the fan, as you could call it, is that obviously, and this is, a few of you might have a little laugh here, but football is a sport, and the same rules should apply to the top level, to the bottom. And that is why we love this game. And it's all governed by the people at Wembley, the FA, yourselves. If we do something wrong, we go to the FA. So surely people looking in, your leagues are, you know, you people are the ones that they're giving the blame to. Really, it should come from the top, surely.
No, I'm quite happy that everything is different. Step five have got the sin bins. We haven't got it at step three and four, so it is different. You know, you've got VAR at the Premier League. We haven't got it down there. The referees have the spray in right up to step one, but we don't have it. So there are differences. And I think that, I believe that the answer was there. You said earlier that, you know, the rule is there. If a club doesn't complete a season, its record is expunged. Now, I think what we've got to do is to go back and say, that's what's happened. You know, if your club didn't for some reason complete the season, the record will be expunged. End of story. And the remaining 19 clubs would be their 19, and that would it, whatever they'd done against your club would have been removed. In this case, 82 clubs, in fact, 228 clubs, didn't complete the season. So I believe that we actually did what was intended.
See, Nick, I saw people, when you came on and you spoke about that the last time, and so forth, and you know me and Keith are, you know, both in agreement with what the decision was. I mean, but I saw some comments on there, and some of the comments were, what Nick said about the expungement was just basically an excuse, because to the fact that these clubs couldn't finish the season, that rule is for people that physically couldn't finish it, you know what I mean? So they couldn't finish the season because it was stopped by the leagues and by the FA. That rule is there for clubs that have gone out of business, or you've stopped them from playing, type thing. Do you know what I mean? So they said it was a little bit of a difference in that rule. It was a bit wishy-washy with that sort of what the two different sides of it.
Yeah, but the government said they couldn't play on. The government introduced lockdown, so there was no way that whilst we suspended, as the Eastman League, we suspended football one weekend, and the following Monday, the Prime Minister said, lockdown, you're not going to be doing anything. So, you know, a club didn't have the opportunity, whether it wanted to or not, it couldn't play on.
That's what I think that's what they were saying, they couldn't play on, so why should that rule apply to them? Surely that should only be if they physically had done something that they couldn't, you know, they were pulled out of the league or they couldn't complete their season.
Well, you know...
Can I just answer, Nick? My concern is that you have one game where a spectator dies because of coronavirus. I couldn't live with myself if one of my spectators died because of this situation. No way could we play a game, just in case.
Oh, yeah, listen, I don't think they were moaning.
Terry, you're 100% right, and I just want to pick up, because obviously not time's getting on, but obviously with what Mark said at the beginning, you know, we spoke quite about what's gone on. What you've just said there, how do we go forward now? And I know we've got meetings with the FA and that you want times and dates, but how can we guarantee, when football's going to start, but to make it safe? Exactly what you've just said there, Terry. How can we make sure that not just spectator, player, board member, official, which is the main thing. The Premier League was brilliant today. They're saying that they're starting on the 16th of or next week. They're only going to start in the referees today if any of them have got coronavirus. I thought it was doubtful. That was brilliant.
Okay, I think the important thing to know here is what's been going on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. So we as three leagues have been working closely together to come up with some kind of roadmap that starts with identifying the challenges. But the one thing certainly that our clubs have said to us, and I'm sure it'll be the same with Terry and Nick, is playing behind closed doors does not work. It won't happen. Second point, and again, I don't know whether this is the case in the Southern or the Isthmian leagues, but certainly from an NPL angle, the message from my clubs loud and clear is we can play in front of limited crowds. We don't necessarily want to, but I've been absolutely knocked out by some of our smaller clubs bringing forward detailed plans for how they will social distance, how they will handle it in training, how they will handle it from a match day perspective. So what we've done is to bring all of that together. A lot of work has been done at the FA by Lawrence Jones and his team to come up with a set of protocols, because as usual, whilst the grassroots end has had sets of protocols, and whilst the professional game has had protocols, guess what? The bit in the middle, us, that's the bit that now needs to be addressed. Mm. So there's a lot of work going on. Ultimately, I believe, and this is purely my belief, I believe that the only people that can actually make this happen is actually almost an alliance between clubs and fans. There's got to be a huge amount of self-policing. Yes, we can put in place things like, and I'm just quoting examples, whether it's around temperature checks, obviously social distancing in bars, which, as I said, our clubs are telling me it's critical that they are able to access the income that goes with the opening bars. How are we going to handle changing rooms from that perspective, away travel? But the problem actually comes up with how do you come up with a set of protocols that suit all clubs? Because, again, the smallest club at step four will be very different in size, mentality, culture, volunteers, to the ones at the top of step three. So the real work is how we make it proportionate. Mm. But ultimately, it'll be up to the clubs to action the guidelines that are given and to police them with the full support of supporters. But just before I hand over to the other two, what's really important is on the Alliance Committee, the Football Supporters Federation is represented. So the work that's going on is actually going on with the input of official supporters groups. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, one of our challenges is to give the confidence that our supporters want to come to our grounds, because that's one of our fears, is that there are people, and, you know, let's face it, in the southeast, a lot of our supporters are quite in that vulnerable age. And what we've got to do is to say to them, you are safe coming to our grounds. That they don't say, I've been self-isolating, I've been shielding for the last umpteen months, I'm going to continue that way. It's a really, really difficult challenge, and I don't know that we can do it. All we can do is to do our best, but we've got to make sure that there is confidence that people come to our grounds and that we've done the best to keep them safe.
Nick, one of the questions as well, I mean, I asked Keith this, and I to be honest with you, I know we've had a discussion about his favourite topic in 3G pitches. But I mean, basically, one of the things for me, we talk about and we see it on the professional game. They've got to go out there. They're cleaning the balls. They're cleaning the corner flags, etc., etc. You know, disinfecting it and all the rest of it. Where does that sit with 3G pitches? Because surely would that not be the same sort of thing, that they'd have to disinfect those pitches as well?
Well, why is a 3G pitch any different to a grass pitch?
Well, because of what the with grass going to seep into the mud. I'm more concerned about sticking on the actual surface itself, on a 3G surface. Would that make a difference?
He's on about the rubber, Nick, but I did say to him that Sevenoaks, in their grand improvement for their grant, got their pitch sanitised. But Nick, just again, and you made some very, very good points about spectators' safety and everything, which is great. But obviously, you can monitor that, but we can't monitor the safety of the players and the officials. So, how can we say? And there's two points, and I mentioned this to you at the weekend. If two teams play each other, including with the referees, and one of them contracts the virus, that you lose two teams and referees for a fortnight. How can we safeguard that?
I think it's virtually impossible. Again, this goes back to there's a balance. Now, let's make it absolutely clear. The last thing anybody would want to do, and certainly none of us, is to create an unsafe environment. But in the same way, I guess, as governments having to balance, and it's not me to say whether they're doing it the right way or the wrong way, we've also got to balance the financial and sustainable health of our clubs. And what is clear is unless they start to be able to generate income, because let's face it, there's also a degree of hypocrisy going on at the moment in certain clubs up and down the country.
Yeah.
You know, I see clubs putting out Just Giving pages and the same clubs signing players on quite expensive contracts the very next day, which is regrettable to say the least. So, but it is all about, we all know that the costs are there. So the clubs have got to be able to bring the income in. We have a choice. If we're going to go with a completely safety first approach, then forget next season.
This is what I'm saying. About you're saying that, and again, we're not having to go anywhere here. This is the thing, the problem that our level of football's got. We can social distance a crowd and say limited. You can't social distance a team. And then you've also got the dugouts. How can you social distance the people in the dugout? It's impossible. So this is what I'm saying about start dates. What would happen in the Northern Premier League if Warrington played South Shields and someone had it and both of them teams couldn't play for a fortnight? How would that affect your league?
The straight answer is it'll have to be dealt with. Now, let me give you a parallel. So let's go back to before, which goes against the grain, go back to when fixtures were suspended. We carried on for, I think, a week, possibly 2 weeks, beyond our colleagues, and we took that decision with a bit of club consultation and all the good things. Now, if someone, God forbid, went down with it, it's very easy to say it's purely football, but it isn't necessarily the case. I mean, who's to say? And I'm not, by the way, trying to build a case for being irresponsible, not at all. But if a player goes down with the disease, have they caught it on the way there? Did they catch it in the petrol station? It could have been 101 different things. Mm. I totally accept, Keith, that these are all challenges we've got to lick, which is why the work's going on now. And in fact, the three leagues are looking at a 35-page document, working our way through, and we have a call on Wednesday to go through some of the detail of this. Because what we can't do, for my money, is issue fairly sort of vague, wishy-washy, well, you might want to do this and you might want to do that. They've got very clear guidelines. Ultimately, though, it will be up to the clubs. And I wouldn't undersell the amount of creativity that's going on in our clubs. A lot of them have actually looked at these and brought forward various ideas. But, of course, no two stadia are the same.
You say it's down to the clubs, but it's not. Like, and I understand what you're saying. But say, for instance, I met you in that week and you went down and my phone went off from the government to say track and trace, I've got to go in isolation. I haven't got a choice. So yeah, the whole, it doesn't matter where I know where I've got it from, but I've met the two teams and the referee, we've all got to go into it as well. This is what I'm saying. It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because we're not saying it's down to the clubs. This is what could happen because we haven't got the testing. We haven't got that to show that we know that you're clear or whatever. It's another spoke in the wheel.
And to come back on that, and you're absolutely right, and that then brings it back to the fundamental question. Do you actually wait until there's A, a vaccine, and B, there are no cases, until we're in New Zealand, effectively? Do you wait until that point And what does that do to the member clubs in the meantime? Nick, as you have a particular point, Nick, about the greatest fear that we have is that people get out of the habit of watching non-league football. Yeah. And that if we don't come back next season, what sort of attendances are going to be there the following year? Because a lot of the people might have found something else to do. So it's a really delicate balance. And I'd almost pose a question back, Keith, which would be, what's better? Do we wait until it's 100% safe? Will it ever be 100% safe? Or do we set off and accept that we may need, either through national lockdown, regional lockdown, a local authority on a council-owned ground going, you're not playing in our facility. Are we better off starting? And it's an open question. Are we better off starting in the knowledge that we may have to suspend, or should we wait?
But would that question, obviously, your three of you that are talking to the Alliance, is that something that you've got to ask them? Because surely, won't that be government-led with the track and trace? Because I'm just saying that we might all start, but if that one it happens at one of your leagues, you know, I made the comment about Tottenham in the week that one of their people have been tested positive. So I put, well, why aren't all the squad in isolation through track or trace? Why should Tottenham be any different to what the government are telling us? So would we be different? This is something I'm asking. Are you going to be led by the Alliance, or are you going to be led by what the government tell us?
Well, I think the answer to that is that we have to be led by government. We've been told that the next announcement is on the 4th of July. So we are looking towards the 4th of July that we hope that there's going to be more gradual relaxation of the restrictions. But going back to Mark's point, you know, it's absolutely right. When do we say, you know, we said earlier, some time ago now, but, you know, do we pick up a date? Do we say, we're aiming to start on this day and change it? I'm not sure we do. I think that what we've got to do is to say, when we can start, it will be under this criteria. Mm. And that criteria is what all the clubs have got to comply with. And we've got to give them time to get to that.
How is
a question, Nick. What is the current R number? Because I'm told today it's less than 1, 9, between 7 and 9. Point.
Yeah.
Should the criteria be 5? That once it's back to 5, open the gates a little bit further.
The problem you've got is that the R factor is different in different parts of the country.
Exactly.
And again, picking up the point from Mark, I don't think that we should have a situation where we can start in Manchester but not in London. You know, because then means that, okay, so we start playing and the Manchester clubs start doing that and they play, but London can't. So suddenly the London clubs have got to play a lot more matches in a shorter period of time. And the whole point about this and the whole point we've been talking about is the Alliance wants everybody to be, as far as we can, equal.
Correct.
And that's
I'm glad we're bringing that point out, Nick, for people that are listening, because, you know, there's going to be people, as you said, that could be in Devon that have had no cases and they're all sitting there going, why can't we play football? But they might not be able to play for 2 months because up in Manchester, they've got cases.
It's about equality. We've got to treat everybody the same. We'll allow them in Devon that they can play matches. They can have non-competitive matches. But we wouldn't want them to start playing competitive matches and therefore get an edge on other clubs, possibly in their own division, who can't play. I mean, it's like you're saying, well, so we get 2 months into the season, that there's a second wave and suddenly half a dozen clubs can't play. So do all the others play? Do we allow them to play on? You know, it's going to be a nightmare scenario.
This is what I'm saying to you. There could be and again, someone made this point to me as well that, you know, some teams, hopefully they wouldn't, but they could use this as well and say, well, I've got 4 players that have gone down with COVID.
Of course they will, Keith.
How do you do that? How do you monitor this? I'm saying this to the viewer. Obviously, this is what hopefully you're putting to the Alliance, but that you've got to deal with.
And just to come in at that point, literally, we have a call on Wednesday, and this is just some of the questions, all of the questions you're raising, which are absolutely valid. These are the ones we've got to discuss and work our way through. The problem is we're dealing with so many what ifs. Yeah. You know, with the government has referenced these regional lockdowns. Just how regional is regional? So is it going to be all of a sudden you can't play a game in Bristol, but you can play it in Taunton? We just don't know. And to be honest, I'm not even sure government knows. And that's why I don't think there will be any guidance from government. I don't think we will get anything other than there'll be guidance for the major industries like hospitality. They've given what they're going to give as far as elite sport is concerned. And it will be up to us to interpret both the professional game and elite sport guidelines, look at the grassroots guidelines, see which are transferable. Don't have all the answers, not at all. But what I can assure you is that we're asking all the questions.
So can I ask then, if we get given a start date, or you get given a start date and you guys decide what the start date is, how long do you give the clubs to get ready for that start date? How many weeks would you be looking at? Are you looking at 4 or 6 weeks? How long would you be giving before that you say there's the first game of the season?
Well, Dave, I think in fairness, let me come back on that. We asked our clubs how much time they needed. We did a Survey Monkey and asked clubs what time they wanted. 31% said they wanted 6 weeks. 24% said they wanted 4 weeks. So we know between us roughly what they want, between 4 and 6 weeks. So that's what I would come back to you and say, we give as much time as we can. But it's going to depend on what's got to be done in that time. What you can't do is certainly say on a Thursday you're going to start playing Monday. But that would be my answer to it.
I mean, just to pick up on some detail there as well, you know, every club's going to have to undertake its own risk assessment. So we need to ensure that, you know, all the risk assessments are being properly conducted. We need to look at what is realistic, even down to real points of detail, down to controversial things like, you know, food for players after the game. You're dealing with away travel, dealing with where you've got a club that might be very particularly well supported. How do we handle away fans? Do you say no away fans? If you do that, we're all football fans. All you do is go and get in the home end. So there's all sorts of these challenges that have got to be overcome. But the work is ongoing. And hopefully, sooner rather than later, we'll have a set of protocols that can be workable.
Do you
when you spoke to the FA and you're asking questions, obviously, you know, again, we've spoke about players, spectators, but have you had any sort of feedback on referees and, you know, my favourite people, the officials? You know, do we know that if they want to come back, if there's enough of them?
Well, interestingly, Mark's referred to this meeting we got on Wednesday, 35-page briefing document. And one of my great things is, what about the match officials? Because there's very little reference to them in that. And I think one of the things that I'm coming out with is say, what are we doing there? Because, you know, do we say to them, well, you've got to turn up changed? Is that fair to them? You know, there's all sorts of things that we need to look at. You're right. I mean, it's madness that we're only now testing the Premier League referees. I'm amazed that's the situation today. But we've also got to look at and say, well, I think the Football Association, who appoint referees at our level, will need to be going, say, well, how many referees have we lost? And I don't mean finally, I just how many don't want to come back?
Well, also the assistants are on an average of an older age.
Yeah.
Also, Nick, with that as well, when you go to the FA, and again, you said about getting changed. I think most clubs would be able to cope with the referees in the changing room. But how about what would clubs be expected to obviously have more expenditure? Would referees have to travel separately? Would you be now having to have referee clubs having to pay maybe two, three times as much for that as well?
Well, you've also got the issue in there, Keith, of it's not just about match officials. You've then got questions like, for example, are clubs going to have to pay for PPE for their volunteers? There's a whole raft of areas where potentially their costs are going to go up. And the point that follows from that is, so what other financial help is out there? I think people will are deluded if they think the Premier League is going to jump in and write everyone a check. They've got a £760 million hole in their finances. The FA's got a £300 million hole in their finances. So it isn't the case that someone sat on a pot of gold, because if, believe me, if there was, then we'd have been into them for it by now. So we've got to find other ways to help our club. So it's not just a matter of costs going up, but the income coming down. And that's going to be a bitter pill to swallow. Totally get that.
With the actual, with the league, when it would have started, August time, September time, what is the situation now then with the likes of dates that you have to apply for your ground sharing and all the other bits and bobs that needs to be done for the beginning of the season, where teams might be sharing ground and other bits and bobs? Have they been given a date to you guys to where they'll be playing?
We've actually asked the question, David, and had the responses that potential ground shares are in place already. So we have asked the question.
To answer the question directly, Dave, the 31st of March, as most clubs know, is a key date, and that's there for ground grading criteria. It's there for licensing. I'm not aware, and Nick, unless you want to put me right on this, I think we've stuck fairly firmly to the 31st of March, because whether you're playing football or not, obviously, if there's work that needs to be done, then we agreed to put the deadline back to the 31st of July. That was right, wasn't it, Nick?
That's correct. The ground grading, we not only put it back to the 31st July, we said, or such later date as the Alliance Committee may agree.
Yeah, I understand. Yep.
So, we certainly haven't, as the Isthmian League, we haven't required our clubs to confirm the ground shares. We will not be doing that until, I mean, it's the same as we haven't had an AGM. We should have had our AGM last Saturday. We didn't. We're not able to do those things until we've got some solid ground to stand on.
Well, let's ask you the question, Nick, that you asked the clubs. How quickly can a league, after you've named the constitution of the league, which none of you have yet, turn it around to be able to start that league?
I think it's actually a fairly simple answer, is how quickly can the clubs do it? We are, as Mark said earlier, we are a combination of clubs. So we can turn it around as quickly as you clubs can. And all what we get is, right, we want you to do this. Remember, we're volunteers. Okay. We'll be your volunteers.
What I'm trying to say, Nick, I get that, but obviously you get all of a sudden, whatever the FA then start putting teams in their leagues, you get the, then how long would it take a league to be able to sort the fixtures out? Because like you said, and I know Kelly, it's a massive job to do because of things like ground sharing, ground grading. Are you sharing with a step two side? How long would that take a league to do?
I think that what will happen next year is, I certainly say for the Isthmian League, we will be very, very understanding of fixture clashes, of all those things, because we will get a fixture list together as and when we know a date, when we know what that will look like, because we don't know whether people are going to play two matches, three matches, one match or what. So the fixture list will be one of the last things we do. But if there are clashes, so because one and two are different and we've got clashes there and everything else, I mean, just from our point of view, Cray Wanderers play at Bromley's ground. Okay, so we may set a fixture list for Cray. Bromley have something else. There's a rule in place that says what happens in the event of a clash. But I think that we will be a lot more understanding for next season.
Yeah, well, what I'm trying to say is, Nick, that we would have had our AGM on Saturday. Normally, August, the first week of August, would have been the start of the season. So you as a league, not us, you Kelly and all the board members, have got 2 months to get the season ready. This is what I'm saying. So how long would it take the Northern Premier or the Southern Premier to actually get that league, once you know the teams, ready to start, not us. Is there a time scale for use?
I think there's some practicalities in it, Keith. I mean, the straight answer to your question is, once you've got your fixtures, really, it goes together fairly quickly. I think each of the leagues is probably working very hard at the moment to do all the prep work to minimise that period. I mean, the irony of where we're at right now is that every year we talk, jokingly say, oh, wouldn't it be good if we had a bit, if only we had a bit more time in season to get stuff in line. Well, guess what? We got what we asked for. So it's impossible to give you a definitive date for all three leagues. But I would have thought from our perspective, once fixtures are out, you can put it together realistically in probably, I would say 4 weeks is probably by the least, because once you've got your fixtures out, then the clubs have got to book their away travel, which one taking coaches to. So for you as a manager, so I can go and beat the chairman up. We don't need a coach to that one, Mr. Chairman, and we'll go and spend it on somewhere else. So there's all of those arrangements. Clubs have got to be able to sell their sponsorship, although that could look very, very different. So there's bound to be a period. And, of course, the other thing we've got to bear in mind is, well, where we stand right now, none of our clubs will have those attractive, high-attended pre-season friendlies. So pre-season might have to look a little bit different.
And obviously, then, going forward to the next stage, when you do sit down to the FA and they could say, right, you could either start the 1st of September, the 1st of October, the 1st of November. Is there a cut-off point, one, to we have no football, or two, where you have to decide if the league changes? Now, obviously, everybody wants to play everybody home and away. I have an opinion, but have you thought about just a one-match season?
Yep. We've certainly looked at contingency plan. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be right on this call to go into the detail of them, but we've looked at contingency plans up to and including not starting till after Christmas.
We look to say 1st of January, 1st of December, backwards, with the options available to us. No League Cup, no County Cups, as discussed earlier. FA Cup, question.
Well, the FA Cup's a big question mark anyway, I would think, wouldn't it? So. Because that needs to start basically normal time, I would think.
Well, the point in the FA Cup is that, you know, like all big boys football, broadcasters are involved. So the first round of the FA Cup, it's a matter of record that the first round proper of the FA Cup cannot take place any later than the first Saturday in November.
Wow.
So you then work it back from there.
Well, like I said, it's not there's step six and step five clubs come in before us, so.
Yeah, I say it's unfortunately, you can, there will be, if unless we start on time, which I think, as we all know, is unlikely, although it's possible, but it's unlikely, then we're not going to have all the clubs participating in the FA Cup this year that would normally participate.
Would that go the same for the FA Trophy as well, then, I assume?
But that's slightly different.
Slightly easier. Go on, Nick. You cover that.
Yeah, I mean, the trophy, don't forget, is only steps one to four. So we can control that a little bit more. I think it's fair to say that it's unlikely that we'll have replays next season in the trophy, because, as Mark says, and I think we can almost say that we're not going to start in August. So, you know, normally the first round of the trophy, I think, is late September, you know, early October. So, you know, the trophy doesn't normally start till around then. And then it's only a preliminary round. So it is a later season competition. And for the step five and six, the VARs is similar. Although the VARs start slightly earlier. But I think we can control those competitions a lot more. And I think that our clubs like playing in the trophy and the VARs.
Yep.
So I think that it's something that we would want to protect. And also, there is prize money in that. Mm-hmm. So whilst the prize money is going to be reduced next year, you know, they want to play in it because they want that prize money.
Then say, right, OK, FA Cup. You know, there's not going to be sort of non-league teams in the FA Cup. Could they then move the money that they would normally be from the first preliminary round of the FA Cup to the last preliminary round of the FA Cup and put that into the FA Trophy and FA Vars?
It comes from different budgets, so it's very unlikely to do that. I think that each competition is a standalone competition with its own budget and its own committee. So the Professional Game Board runs the FA Challenge Cup committee. We have a couple of representatives on that. And what I can say is that I'm fairly certain that we will be looking to give the money away if we can. So if we're not able to play the extra preliminary round of the FA Cup, which disadvantages the Step 6 clubs, I believe they will try and find a way to allocate the money that's budgeted for that round.
Yeah.
And so it goes on to the preliminary round, the first qualifying, second qualifying, and so on. How it, Lord alone knows. And once again, we would please all the people all the time. But
it'd mostly be an equal share, Nick, I would think. But just with the FA Cup, and I know interviews, it is a bit, but your clubs themselves, obviously, it was a big kick gonads that being told if we're in the FA Cup, you're going to, you know, the prize money's cut in half because there's a £300 million deficit. Why can't that be taken at the higher end of the rounds of the FA Cup and kept it for the smaller clubs that need the money more than the others?
Can I refer you back to Mr. Harris to answer?
Again, back to the structure of football and where the power. The answer to all the questions always lies in who has the votes. There are many inequalities. I think that there is a very serious conversation that has to be had about the funding of football, because there is not enough equity in it. There are elements of the game, although we've been assured that no area of the game will be immune from cuts. We get, if you'll pardon the French, bugger all now. And we're going to get less than bugger all going forward. Now, Nick, myself and Anthony from the Southern League, we can stand up at FA Council meetings till we are blue in the face. The problem is that the FA is a very, very broad church. It has got so many different stakeholders, from futsal, you know, the growing women's game, the professional game. The professional game, I think we would be, I would love to think that the professional game would recognise it has a responsibility to the lower levels of the game. Perhaps I'm a little cynical, but I don't see it happening.
Can you see where people like the supporter get the ump, where obviously just keep going back with some of our conversation, where the FA make this decision, but they're impartial to making points per game and whatever, then it's down to us. This is where the inconsistency is, isn't it?
Well, the thing is, the fundamental issue there is, what is the FA? You know, and if the FA was some bloke who looked like the Bond villain, sat in his underground volcano, stroking his white cat and deciding where all the money goes, then, yeah, I would accept that. But the umbrella term of the FA covers so many different interests. And also, the counter argument is, and this is very much, and I don't subscribe to it personally, but the argument is that money comes into football because of the clubs at the top end, and they should therefore share, that should take the lion's share of it. Now, we all know what the counter argument to it, but to be honest, I'm a realist, and I think there are battles to fight and there are battles not to fight. Don't know whether Nick or Terry, you want to expand on that, having completely shot myself in the foot.
No. I think your point. If 1.8 million to the winner of the FA Cup, to me, is slightly obscene. 900,000 to the loser, slightly obscene. When extra preliminary round, 30 bob. Not right.
No. No.
I mean, you could argue, just pick that point up. You could argue that in the apportionment of prize monies generally should be more equitable, because the clubs at the lower level need it more. I mean, Keith, for you particularly as a manager, yeah. I'm sure that you'll look at your budget, and a lot of it will be based on how you do in the FA Cup. The longer you stay in the FA Cup, the more chance you've got of sustaining your budget and keeping the players really on side.
Yeah, I will say we don't budget the FA Cup money, if I'm honest, because we don't normally do that well in it. But I agree. I wouldn't be here. I agree with what you're saying. I even think even again, and it stops at level two. I just think step two, I just think, you know, football money wise, even the Sky money did filter down to level two. But they come in, you know, I know things like Dartford and that, they come in the rounds later, win one game, and they're £25,000 in the FA Cup money up. Whereas teams at step five, six, four, like three come in a little bit later, you know, you're challenge, you're having to get five or six games to get £10,000, £11,000, £12,000, where they come in once. It just, you know, it. I don't know. I would quite like to see sort of nearly the same money for every round until you get to a certain level. Again, it's not down to use, but
I think that I'm not sure that you're right with saying that step two comes in and gets 25,000. I mean, I think the 25,000 is in the fourth qualifying round. Well, it was last year. Mm-hmm. Step two, I think, comes in at the second qualifying round. Yes. And I think it's right that you make it more the further you go on. Mm. I can see the argument for saying that so much, you know, win a game in the competition, you get that amount of money. But I think coming back, you know, what we said earlier about the Premier Division sides, they will say that without them in it, the broadcasters won't pay the money that's there. Yeah. They turn around and say, that's fine. Yeah, run VCD and Hitchin. You do that. See how many people want it. See how many broadcasters want to use that. Won't happen.
So, and to take that point on, just let's just have a what-if scenario. So, you know, we, unlike the Steps 1 and 2, we don't have a broadcast partner. We'd love to have a broadcast partner. How would our clubs react if we got a broadcast partner across Steps 3 and 4, and we then said, right, we want to share that with Steps 5, 6 and 7? I suspect we would get severe pushback. That's human nature. You know, and I would love to think that there would be sufficient monies in football for it to be shared out equally. But the more you've got, the more you need. And there are several areas of the game which I do feel are overfunded, but that's the way it is. We'll continue to try and challenge that and hold people to account further up the line. But again, there aren't going to be any knights on charges coming over the hill.
So one of the things I'd ask you guys. We talked about negative side of the league stopping a bit, Ilson, but the real negative side of it, I suppose, was the fact of the amount of I was going to say abuse, but that's not what I mean. Not the word I really want to use. But the type of negative comments that you guys got as chairman through social media, maybe through emails, because we're not saying to the emails that you receive. How did you and your boards react to that kind of negative feedback from your own clubs in your own league?
Well, I think I would say that, as Mark told you, the negativity came from a very small minority. I can tell you, certainly in my league, we got a fantastic amount of support from our chairman. You know, I had chairman ringing me, texting me, emailing me, all saying, would hate your job, well done what you're doing, you've got our support.
Can I go back to what Mark raised at the very beginning, that each of our boards are made up of member clubs, directors. So we have 10 directors, all are directors of clubs in the league. Therefore, the flat wasn't nowhere near as much as I thought it would have been.
But what I'm trying to say is, I wasn't trying to be negative to you guys. What I'm trying to say is, you as human beings, when you get that type of feedback that I've seen, and some of it's quite nasty on social media around you and your league and your club, so in your committees, how does that make you personally feel when you, from those few people that did not like the decision, how did that make you guys, you know, how did you cope with that sort of, as chairman of your separate leagues, how did that make you, you know, how did you cope with that sort of such negativity, and some of it quite stinging negativity as well?
To be honest, I won't say it doesn't hurt, because we wouldn't be human beings if it didn't. But as Nick and Terry have said, the bulk of the negativity didn't come from clubs. It will have come from And I certainly do not wish to label all fans as moan, not at all. But where there was resistance, understandably, it's coming from the clubs who feel that clubs fans who feel they've been let out. But to be honest, each of us is a volunteer in our organisations. We're also football fans. So, of course, you feel it. And then, yeah, there is temptation sometime to go and find the culprit, go around and give him a right good kicking. But that's probably not a good idea. But more seriously, it goes with the territory. And to be honest, it's Nick and Terry and our colleagues. We try and keep one another going.
But Mark, remember that what I do is I always say, well, it's those other so-and-sos in the Northern Premier League and the Southern League. I'm outvoted 2-1. So, I get the sympathy of everybody.
Absolutely. The other thing I do is have a very gin.
Well, we know it's Mark, just you liked your stats, but just going into David, and I've said this many times, and the non-league paper, which I was a little bit aggrieved with, when they said that they had 200 odd letters on a petition to go to the FA, and I said, when you weighed it up, it was out of, and this include women as football as well, and that's another story, but it come out of 3,000 clubs, only 200 and something.
Yeah.
Sort of
7.9%, Keith.
There we go. I think you made the right decision. Just on another thing while we're here, and again, it might be a question, might get you on ad hoc. On the plus side, and I know I spoke to Nick, the amount of grants and that have been available this season, I know our club, pitch maintenance, and obviously I know you've got your tax and your bars and things like that. We've applied for quite a bit, and I know that's been a good thing, and hopefully clubs across your leagues have been able to do that, just to sort of help the clubs out to try and get them through. But has anything for the leagues, has there been any grants or funding for yous yourselves to get you through?
No,
we certainly were able to apply. Our league office is in Dartford, and Dartford Borough Council were very good, and we got a grant from them. Because we pay rates to them, we got a grant. So we certainly got ours.
Gloucester Council gave us money. Yes,
good. They did. We didn't, simply because we operate a virtual office, so we don't pay anybody rates. But
again, so you've got virtually nothing.
I would say it was absolutely nothing. It wasn't virtually nothing. It was absolutely nothing. But to be honest, the serious point behind it is. So clubs have had some support. So there's been the grants, there's been the pitch zone, and for some clubs, 30,000 quid round figures in the bank account at the start of pre-season is a nice way to start pre-season. Again, I think it's regrettable, and I've touched on this before, what really gets to me is the hypocrisy of clubs who say we get no support and we're having to do this and we're going to have to cut this, this and this, and then turn around and sign players on substantial contracts. And ultimately, everyone's feeling the pain, and the players generally, I think, have also got to take their share of the pain. And I just hope that, to sound a note of optimism, and this may well be naive, I would like to think that perhaps some players' wage demands or wage expectations are much more realistic next season. I've got a horrible feeling, though, they won't be, and there's no chance that they will be. Clubs continue to sign players on unsustainable contracts.
Whether it's wishful thinking, Keith, but I've had a number of club chairmen phone me to say, because of the situation, we will be cutting our budget for next season.
Do you know, it's funny, Terry, that you said...
Substantially. Let's wait and see.
That's funny. That's what I was going to ask, what the feeling was across the three leagues, if you think that was going to be the case. Because, Dave will tell you, over the last 5 or 6 weeks, we must have interviewed 18 managers, and every single one of them, maybe bar one, have said their club's in a very good position. They're not looking at a wage cut. They budget for 2 to 3 years in advance, and that shocked me. Oh. And that's the vibe I'm sort of getting. And also, some are thinking that they saved the quarter's wage bill last year. They're mostly going to save maybe the same again this year, week-wise.
Well, I've probably had 7, 8... chairman phoned me, say they will be cutting their budgets between 33 and 50%, even. That's as high as 50% cutting the budget.
You said about the clubs applying for grants. The shock that I had, and I was really quite disappointed that we again put a Survey Monkey out, asked our clubs who had applied for grants and who got them, everything else. We had a huge number of clubs who didn't even bother applying.
Wow.
And you just think, you know, it's there. Government are saying, here's money, and they haven't applied.
Some think that there's no such thing as a free ride, Nick. That's why I think a lot of them maybe think that they have to pay it back.
Well, I think it's an interesting point.
Loan is loan.
It's an interesting point, Keith, because to echo what Terry said, a number of clubs have said to us that, yes, they cut their wage bills. But I think, there's a bit of smoke and mirrors going on here. And I think in reality what's going to happen is that, and I think this would be negative, is that a gap will emerge, an even wider gap's going to emerge between those clubs that have got good, well-off benefactors who can afford to soak up the impacts of this and still go for it, and those that do live that little bit more hand-to-mouth. I think that's probably a sad but inevitable consequence. And as everybody keeps telling me, oh, yeah, we're cutting the budget. But then when you actually look at what they're spending, reality is saying something a bit different.
Yeah. Well, it should be interesting. We do start, and like I said, Dave, can we just cut the budget bit out when my chairman watches the show?
I'm on the phone to him now.
Yeah, tell him to give him some more money. He's not got enough.
No.
Well, Keith, as you know, it's the manager's job to ask for what he can't have, and it's the chairman's job not to give it him.
I think one.
I will say my club's doing a hell of a lot of work to their ground in the summer, and what they've done is remarkable, to be fair. So that has been one of the only pluses of the big sort of gap we've had, is that we've managed, and our chairman and the committee have done a fantastic job, like redoing our changing rooms and everything. It's been immense, really.
I think
we put the manager's chair of the technical area above the dugout, so he has to sit up on his own.
Well, the stall gets kicked as well, and there's a rope.
I think, how far ahead are you planning then, Keith? Are you 3 years ahead planning?
No. No, we're a different club, Terry. We're a small club that, in numbers, I would say, on help and committee, but also on our fan base, we've got a hell of a lot of clubs connected. Like, we've got a team that all good friends of mine, Phoenix Sports, that's 100 yards from our ground, that play at the same level as us. Yeah. So, you know, our average crowd, I think, was about 91. Oh. We're lucky we've got a brilliant chairman that you know, we're a social club as well that have other sports that, you know, we have got business plan, but we're sort of, you know, we're solely reliable, I would say, on the great chairman we've got.
Because what I've been saying to chairman or people as clubs as I go around is that, please, if you've got a sugar daddy, ask him to put money into the ground. Because I've seen a number of clubs get promoted and then they don't meet the ground grading requirements. Mm. And that's crazy. You know, they put a lot of money into the team and the facilities are not good enough, which is wrong, totally wrong.
I think one thing we have we've skipped tonight is, and something that has happened since the lockdown and to tonight, and no one's actually mentioned it yet, I suppose, because Mark and Terry have seen it quite regularly. What a magnificent bid Nick's grew in this time, eh? He's been trying to go off all show, yeah. He's giving it, and I've just thought we've got to say, it's been there.
David, I've booked him for December.
I have said this is not coming off till Isthmian League football kicks off again.
I was thought if we had the dinner and dance last on Saturday, Nick, surely you couldn't have had that with a white suit.
Well, listen, gentlemen, it's been fantastic having you on with us tonight, and hope you've enjoyed that gin, Mark. But no, in all fairness, it's been a fantastic night, and really, really pleased that you've given up your time and given us the chance to have a chat with you guys. And I hope we haven't been too we've been nice and gentle with you. I hope that you feel that. But we do thank you very, very much for giving up your time, and hopefully we can do this again maybe once we get a date of when the season's going to be, and maybe we can meet up and do it again.
Thank you. Yeah, very good, gents.
Can I just say, and I said this earlier, and I think just for the supporters and the people that don't know, and just look maybe at the Eastern League or just look at the Northern Premier, how good impression it's done, that how close you all three leagues are as one, and to me, I think that's great for non-league football in the pyramid, that we need that. Like I said, Nick, I remember years ago when it was all separate and it was like, oh, I'm not talking to the Northern League and we're worrying about ourselves. And I think the only way to join up on the sort of National League is for you to join resources like you're doing.
Bring that, Keith, because bottom line is, together we are stronger.
And we do, everybody, you know, every fan, thanks you and your committee for what you've been doing through this tough time.
Thank you. Thanks, David.
No worries. Thank you very much indeed, sir. Next week, joining me and Keith next week on the show next week, will be the boys from Brazil. The guys will be coming on talking about their trip, of course, to Brazil and, of course, the book, the sell from Corinthian Casuals. We've also got the man that I never thought we'd ever get on the show, but he said he's definitely coming on next week, Mr. Danny Chapman. He'll join us next week as well. And also, as well, nominated for one of the football awards as well this week, Alfie Gates. Will also join us in the studio next week as well. But until then, a massive thank you to Mark, to Nick, for Terry, and of course for Keith as normal. And me and Keith, we'll see you the same time next week, 7 till 9, next Monday night. Good night. Thank you.
Cheers. Bye. Bye now.
Thanks very much. Bye.